In the dying days of this year's election campaign, former Prime Minister Scott Morrison promised to change if voters gave him the chance.
And I know Australians know that I can be a bit of a bulldozer when it comes to issues, and I suspect you guys know that too. But you know, over the last few years, that's been pretty important to ensure we've been able to get through some of the most important things that we've had to do. I know there are things that are going to have to change with the way I do things.
But hardly anyone knew the full extent of how Scott Morrison was governing. And now the former Prime Minister faces a censure motion in Parliament. Now, some in the coalition have spoken out about the toll this saga and others took. It's all detailed in Nikki Saver's new book, Bulldozed. She joins me now. Nikki, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In your book, you write about how he bulldozed his own colleagues and that many were scared to stand up to him. Are we still seeing that happening as the government looks to censure Scott Morrison in the House of Representatives and the opposition looks like it's unlikely to support that?
Well, it does look as if it's unlikely, which I think is staggering, considering the severity of the actions that Morrison took, which undermined cabinet, parliament and conventions. And the opposition now is trying to treat it as if it's something trivial, you know, with no consequences. It is actually a very big deal what Morrison did when he acquired those five extra ministries, most of them secretly, without telling the ministers involved, without telling the parliament, and without telling the people. Now, this is not a small thing, I don't think. And maybe they got used to having him roll over them and bulldoze them. Maybe they got used to just, you know, accepting what he dished out. But I really do think that this is a time that they should be standing up.
The censure motion sparked by those secret ministries saga will likely pass given support from the government and the crossbench, even on the numbers. Do you see this as an opportunity, given all of the revelations beyond just the secret ministries, for the coalition to distance themselves from Scott Morrison?
I think they should have done that from the outset, from the day or the day after the defeat. I do think they needed to draw a line under the Morrison era and everything that that brought on the Liberal Party. I mean, the Liberal Party is a rubble now, a rabble and a rubble. It's lost its heartland seats. It basically is, you know, a bit of a rump in the parliament, and it has to rebuild. And the longer it takes for the party to separate itself from Morrison and what Morrison did, the longer it will take for the party to be able to begin the rebuilding process. And that is not going to be an easy thing. So I think the sooner that they can get going on that, the sooner that they can create different policies, stronger leadership, more vibrant leadership, more consultative, and to re-establish some of those values that the Liberal Party used to be renowned for, which is why they held on to those seats for such a long time, then the better it will be for them. But the longer they leave it, the more dangerous it will be for them. And there are actually people now in the Liberal Party who are worried that the party itself might not survive.
Might not even survive. Do you think it's that serious, this crisis?
Yeah, I do. I do think it's that serious. I think you only need to look at what happened in Victoria. Victoria, you know, they're trying to put, the Liberals are trying to put the best face on it. But let's face it, Andrews was not an especially popular leader. There were a lot of people who were unhappy with the way he had not only conducted the lockdowns, but with other aspects of the way he ran the state, with his arrogance and, you know, his lack of consultation, the fact that he froze people out. And the Liberals could not even capitalise on that one iota. They might be lucky enough to pick up, to retain the seat of Q and to resume Pesutto's seat of Hawthorne, which might give Josh Frydenberg a pathway back into federal parliament. But I think the fact that they were able to make such little headway speaks volumes about the Liberal Party and where it is today and what people think of the Liberal Party today.
I want to go back to your book and some of the revelations in it. I mean, you've got people like Alex Hawke, who's known as a close ally of Scott Morrison's, sits next to him right now on the backbench, who spoke to you about how the former Prime Minister refused to listen and he's how, you know, he believes power was influencing him. Were you surprised that even voices like that have gone on the record to repudiate the kind of governing style of Scott Morrison?
A little bit surprised, but not entirely. I mean, I'm glad that they did that. I'm glad that they've come out and, you know, tried to tell people what it was really like having Morrison as Prime Minister. I think it's a shame that more people didn't do that before the election and didn't do it publicly to separate themselves a bit from Morrison. I think that was a mistake. Maybe he might have paid a bit of attention then. But they allowed him to do exactly what he wanted, whenever he wanted, with whoever he wanted. There was very little resistance, except from Bridget Archer, let's say, and she was joined later on by others over the religious discrimination bill, and that was a welcome thing. But it was very late in the piece, and I think, excuse me, if more people had stood up to him sooner, it might not have been as bad, but they allowed him to bulldoze them. They accepted it, and I think that was, you know, part of the price that they're paying now. So if ever there was a time that they called a stop to that and drew a line under it, surely it's now, when there's a vote in the parliament on something that is really so serious.
Do they regret not standing up to him earlier? Are there any personal reflections, soul-searching on their individual responsibility here?
Yes, I think some of them do. I think some of them wish that they had stood up to him sooner. Some of them tried, but in many cases they just sat back and allowed it. Like, for instance, the moderates. Morrison owed his existence as Prime Minister to the moderates, so he owed them, and they never extracted a price from him for that. And I think they should have stood up to him sooner, particularly on climate change. I mean, the Nationals, as we've seen today with The Voice, were never frightened to put their case against climate change, often in the most damaging way for the coalition. And the Liberal backbenchers would basically sit there and cop it. And eventually, you know, they gathered together and tried to get Morrison to move, and they did. But it was too little too late. They needed to start that process sooner, they needed to be tougher, and they needed to be more upfront. So they paid a price for their acquiescence, like they're paying a price for their acquiescence now, I believe.
Nikki Sava, it's an excellent book. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Pleasure.
Nikki Sava is an author, former political journalist and former senior advisor to John Howard and Peter Costello, and Bulldozed is released on Thursday this week.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.